This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Outside of emergency rooms, it seems like many of us fail to understand this pandemic in real time, to understand the seriousness of it, the appalling fatality. Now, I'm not talking about the cynical disinformation that was spread by the president and his media allies. What I mean here is the spring breakers who seemed so oblivious to what was going on and continued partying on beaches. I'm talking about the way that there were crowded city parks and crowded restaurants and bars, even as the death toll began to soar. Even elected officials, leaders at all levels of government, struggled to respond to the virus in a way that reflected just how serious the problem actually was and is. How and why people misunderstand and make mistakes is the life's work of Daniel Kahneman, a scholar whose work revolutionized the field of cognitive psychology. He's a winner of the Nobel Prize and the author of Thinking, Fast and Slow, a bestseller about human behavior. Maria Konnikova, who's written for The New Yorker about psychology and many other subjects, spoke to Daniel Kahneman last week.
This is an exponential event. That is, we see things doubling every 2 days, every 3 days, every 4 days. And people don't, and certainly including myself, don't seem to be able to think straight about exponential growth. So I knew that there were 100 cases in France, and I was about to fly to France. I also knew that epidemics are exponential. I didn't even consider the fact that if the rate of infections doubles every 3 days, then in a month it will be increased by a factor of 1,000. And what we see today are infections that occurred 2 or 3 weeks ago. And the deaths of today are people who got infected 4 or 5 weeks ago. All of this is, I think, sort of beyond intuitive human comprehension. And that's interesting, that we're in a situation that we're simply not equipped to understand.
So I'm interested in how then people can make decisions and can follow kind of advice, both from the personal level, like you and I, but also from the highest levels. Like if even someone like you is unable to grasp the nature of exponential growth and what it might mean, how do leaders use all of this information to make decisions? How do they think through it? How do they figure out, okay, well, what is the best way forward?
Well, people tend to be focused, and obviously that was true of President Trump as well. They tend to be focused on the number of casualties or cases or death today. And this is something that you want to warn people against. Don't look at what is happening today. You need to extrapolate into the future. In terms of people obeying instructions, you don't need many numbers. I mean, I think that if the president said, looking very serious, this is a very serious problem and we're anticipating many casualties, people will obey, people will pay attention. It's not even a matter of people making good decisions. It's a matter of getting people to behave in a particular way, in a way that's appropriate to a state of fear when they're not actually experiencing fear.
And on the individual level, is there anything that we can try to do on an individual level psychologically to be better equipped to make these choices?
I think that this is not individual decision making. That's really the theme of the conversation, yeah. From my point of view. This is not individual decision making. Individuals should make the smallest possible number of choices because they're not equipped to do it. There should be clear guidelines and clear instructions. We all ought to know whether we should open our Amazon packages outside the door or bring them in. It's not a decision that individuals should consider making on the basis of what they know, because they don't know enough to make it.
Has your thinking about risk perception, has this situation actually affected it at all?
Well, you know, I'm surprised by myself, in a way, by my inability to grasp what is going on, by my inability to be worried at the appropriate level.
You know, you can think of every time someone decides to go to the park, something like that, as kind of a gambling decision, almost gambling with your own health, gambling with the health of others. And I think a lot of the work you've done has revolved around how we evaluate kind of the risks, the costs, the benefits of different gambles in that sense. How do we make those evaluations? You know, how do we think through that type of calculus when we make decisions?
There is one difficulty, clearly, which is that if you view every time that you go to the supermarket as a gamble, you're not doing it quite right. I mean, it's a gamble in the same sense as wearing or not wearing seatbelts is a gamble. It's a cumulative gamble. And the risk for any one behavior is very, very slight. It's adopting a pattern of behaviors that on the whole, for many people, is going to be safer. And here, the main cue that we're getting, I think, is the behavior of other people. I mean, I am very struck by the change in the behavior of people in the supermarket over the last few days. And that signal that other people are aware of what is happening, that is the main way, I think, that risks get communicated.
That's really interesting. So you're talking a lot about kind of the norms of behavior. You know, we don't have a norm of wearing masks. We don't have kind of a norm of obeying necessarily kind of those stricter things coming from the top. Do you think that it's we might need a change when it comes to that?
Well,
It's a difficult question.
Nobody is going to change the culture. The culture is what it is. But I'll give you an example. If I don't watch much television, but I see pictures of the daily conference calls of the president. If they were distancing there, that would send a signal. Mm-hmm. When you see a lot of people, you know, and within the wrong distance of each other and clearly not taking the kind of precautions that they would like everybody else to take, that sends a very strong signal and not a good one.
Yeah.
So that kind of communication is more important than any verbal communication. And we need the appropriate emotional melody because when the president communicates that he really thinks that a lot of this stuff is being exaggerated. The damage that this does is really huge.
Did you end up taking your trip to France or did you not go?
You know, I hesitated to the last minute. And then I decided, no, I'd better not take that trip. But even when I made the decision, I wasn't thinking straight. But actually, I had the tools to think much more precisely about it. I didn't use those tools.
Can you elaborate a little bit? What were the tools that you had but that you didn't use?
The tools would be to try to think what it means that a pandemic is spreading. And I completely failed to see that. Although, if I had tried to think straight, if I had, you know, tried to write my thoughts about it, just to think carefully, I would probably have figured it out, but I wasn't doing this. Because the number of deaths at that time was small.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't look very worrying. And the idea that this is exactly what a pandemic looks like, I could have known, lots of people could have known, obviously, whose actions were much more important than my decision of whether or not to go to Paris. And a lot of preparations that should have been taken were not.
Are you, I don't want this to come off wrong, but are you optimistic? Are you pessimistic? What is your kind of, what is your feeling about our ability to get through this?
You know, I mean, if you take a longer view, then of course you have to be optimistic. You know, I'm pretty sure there'll be some cure, there'll be a vaccine. And, you know, even without a cure and without a vaccine in 1918, so, you know, millions of people died, but society survived. For old people like me, the prospects are not good. I see very little reason for optimism. I mean, you know, at the best, I would say, for the older among us, you know, this is pretty much a life sentence of incarceration at home, or a very long-term sentence. This is going to change the rest of our life. So for society, I'm definitely optimistic. You know, there's no question, I think, this is not an existential danger. We'll come out of it. Society will come out of it. The economy will come out of it. It could take several years. But ultimately, you know, life will go on.
Daniel Kahneman is professor emeritus at Princeton, and he's the author of Thinking, Fast and Slow, and other books. Maria Konnikova is the author of The Confidence Game and the forthcoming The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win.